Disrespect welcomes Andy Rady, treasurer of the Criminal Lawyers Association. And you've been practicing in London, you said, what, 27 years?
27 years.
Wow. Welcome to the show.
Pleased to be here.
I read in the paper recently about London joining the Criminal Lawyers Association. There's an easy word and there's a right word for this. It's a what are you calling it?
It's a boycott.
Yeah, the boycott of legal aid because of the legal aid rates that are being paid to criminal lawyers. They're not even covering costs, apparently.
No, but if I can indicate, and to be clear, we're not boycotting all legal aid. We're boycotting taking retainers in cases that involve homicide or guns and gangs crimes. Some of the more serious crimes out there. So we want to make sure that we're not, you know, indicating that we're leaving anyone really in the lurch.
Okay. Why did you pick those particular crimes to boycott? Are they the most expensive?
Those are the kinds of areas that people may notice if it's difficult to get a lawyer. And secondly, they're the kinds of crimes that if someone's charged and they're difficult, or they have a difficult time getting a lawyer, that the lawyer may be able to bring an application to the court for funding beyond the legal aid tariff.
Oh, so how does that relate to the boycott?
Well, it relates to the boycott because essentially what we're saying is that the legal aid tariff in Ontario has fallen woefully behind what it should be.
At the legal aid offices along with it too. Yeah.
Well, that's true. It's all of legal aid. It's never been the main player in the justice equation that gets any funding.
Right.
We've seen over the last 20 years or so serious increases to what is paid to the prosecution of cases in terms of, you know, what crown attorneys are paid, what judges are paid, police budgets have gone up. There have been all kinds of initiatives to create different kinds of courts, domestic violence courts, courts concerning aboriginals, therapeutic or mental health courts. But there hasn't been any kind of a corresponding increase to the legal aid tariff, which is what is paid to lawyers. And not just the tariff which is paid to lawyers, but also what the lawyers get paid to pay for experts in the important cases.
Right.
There's a very limited amount that can be paid for a lawyer to use the resources of say, psychiatrists or investigators or other kinds of practitioners that may be important in the defense of a criminal case.
All right.
And consequently, it's been rather difficult to get experts to be able to testify to counter what, you know, the Crown may have. And their resources in that field are obviously much greater than what goes to the defense.
Yeah.
And there's a concern that, if this continues, a couple of things are going to happen. One, we're going to see miscarriages of justice because the accused person just cannot afford to, fight a proper defense in their case. And that's probably the main concern. The other concern is that with lawyers not taking legal aid cases, these accused may just not be able to find lawyers to represent them, or at least lawyers who are of sufficient experience and seniority in doing these kinds of cases, such that that person will be on a level playing field. Because right now we're saying it's not a level playing field, and you can even spend a lot of money on the prosecution side, but you have to spend it on the other side. However, that's really not an attractive thing politically in the current environment that we have. We're talking, every political party seems to talk about we have to be tough on crime and all these other initiatives, but no one really seems to say that we should be fair to the person who the state charges. And that's what we're trying to say, is there has to be some semblance of fairness there.
Absolutely. Now, I understand that the Crown attorneys, the so-called well-paid Crown attorneys, have come up on your side.
They have, and that's very pleasing, because we've always been supportive, our association has, of the Crown attorneys over the years when they've gone to the government and sought to have increases so they can be adequately paid. But the difference, you see, between the Crowns and the defense bar is this, that we are a private bar. And yes, you can say people should be paying you out of their own pockets. Well, if they can, they have to. That's what our system says. If they have the means to pay a lawyer privately, they should, and they do. But it's those people who don't have that ability can't. And a lot of people who are charged with serious criminal offenses do not have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty, of course, from the lawyer's point of view, the private lawyer's point of view, is this. They also have to run their office. They have to staff their office. They have to have, you know, their assistants. They have to, you know, get their stationery. They have to have their office space, that sort of thing. And that's expensive.
Yeah.
So that comes out of the amount of money we're paid by legal aid, whereas you see the Crown salaries, they have... There's no correlation between that and the number of staff in their offices or the police authorities or anything of that nature. So, yes, it might look on the surface that, you know, at the highest legal aid rate, which right now for senior lawyers, that's lawyers with more than 10 years' experience, is $96.95 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That may seem to be a lot, but when you take out the overhead expense, which in a lot of cases can get to be well more than even 50% of that, the amount being paid is not sufficient. And considering that the experts that we have to hire are also being paid at a lesser rate than they would pay be paid sort of privately if they were retained.
Apparently quite a bit lesser.
It limits that.
Quite a bit lesser, apparently.
Considerably.
Yeah. And then there's a cap on the hours you can spend, so if you feel the case needs more hours, those aren't paid at all.
That's correct. There is a cap on the hours that you can spend, and if you spend more, then essentially it's a... You know, if we talk about pro bono work, there's almost obviously a pro bono element to legal aid. And I think what we're saying here is, look, we know the economic times are difficult, but we've had recessions in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And we've had good times in the last 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
It never has seemed to be an appropriate time to seek a legal aid increase. And we've tried, you know, we've sought this over the last number of years, and what we're trying to do is to bring to public attention and the attention of the government that they cannot continue to underfund the legal aid plan. And there's other functions. It's not just the provincial government, but, you know, there's money coming from the federal government to the Ontario Legal Aid. Money comes from the Law Foundation of Ontario to legal aid.
Right.
But still, there has to be an infusion at some point. Otherwise, we're going to have a great dilemma in our justice system of unfairness. And unfairness to those who cannot afford it, those who are most vulnerable, and we're going to have really a two-tier system of justice, those who can afford justice and those who can't. And that's either going to be important to people or it's not. And so in terms of, yes, is this the right time or the wrong time when we have issues concerning health care and education, obviously we are not blind to the economic dilemmas that the governments are being faced with right now. However, we've heard that before. This isn't the time. This isn't the time. And when it was the time, it wasn't the time either. So it's a long process of trying to educate just what is going on in our justice system, and that's one of our problems. A lot of people really do not understand how the justice system works.
You mean the adversarial nature and the funding requirements of the justice
system? The adversarial
system?
Nature and the funding requirements and. You know, we see a lot of our justice system of what we see in the media, what we read in the newspapers. You know, we see about a sensational case, and it's human nature. You pass judgment on whether someone is guilty or not guilty from what you see in the paper. And if someone's guilty of something, why should we be paying for someone's defense when they did something that was so bad? Well, what we forget about, and what no one really seems to emphasize, is this lovely thing that we've had in our system since, you know, it began, which is called the presumption of innocence.
Yeah.
And just because someone is charged by the police and just because the newspapers have, you know, sensationalized the story about it does not mean that the person is guilty. They have to be proven guilty in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And what we're saying is if you have all of these resources of the state to bear on that individual who is being charged by the state,
mm-hmm.
then you also have to level the field and make sure that they can put forth a proper and adequate defense. If at the end of the day they're found guilty, well, the system has worked. But if at the end of the day they're found guilty and they were not able to actually put forth a serious defense in the matter because of proper funding, it shows a great bias in favor of the power of the state over the power of the individual citizen. And what we have to remember is that anybody out there at any time may be wrongfully charged with an offense and will have to defend themselves. It doesn't mean just because I'm a good person and I seem to be law-abiding that I'm not going to have to, face the justice system at some point. It could happen to anyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and much of the expense is your own, regardless of whether you're found guilty or not.
That's true.
Yeah.
So and if you're found not guilty, There is no redress to go to the state to pay for legal fees in a criminal case.
No,
it doesn't happen.
Oh, okay. You know, so if they're not awarded, then that's the end of it.
No, for example, in a civil case where someone is suing someone else, there is a provision there for the winning party, so to speak, to get some of their costs paid by the losing party.
Mm-hmm.
But in a criminal case, someone who is found not guilty does not have that redress. Now, we've seen that in some of the more sensational cases where there have been horrendous miscarriages of justice for people who have gone to jail and spent several years charged with murder and found out that they're innocent, you know, the after-the-fact DNA testing sort of thing.
Yeah.
But for the average Joe out there or the average person out there who might be charged with a less serious crime and found not guilty, you know, there's no redress for them.
It's not just out of pocket.
They're out of pocket, no matter what they do. Now, that's not really a legal aid issue, but it's one of the issues that, as I say, people don't really understand.
Well, if you have no pocket, if you have no money in your pocket, it's a legal aid issue for sure. Because
yeah.
if you're, how can you be out of pocket when you don't have the money to start with?
Exactly.
And the money isn't provided for your defense, in effect.
But one of the big things we have to understand when we're looking at legal aid and other issues in the justice system is just because the person is charged with an offense doesn't mean that they are guilty of that. They are charged with that offense.
Yeah.
And it is for the state that charges them, that has these resources, to prove that they're guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. And I think we forget about that a lot, and we sort of think, oh, this is a bad person, we've read about them, this is a horrendous crime, and why are we paying for their defense? Well, we forget for a moment, we have to remember for a moment, they have not been found guilty yet. It's only been reported in the newspaper, so to speak.
Yeah. Do you find you practice in Canada, but do you find a different attitude amongst colleagues in the States that they expect that the public is more supportive of the defendant's right to presumption of innocence? Or is it a uniquely sort of Canadian attitude, or is this a growing concern?
Oh, I think it's a growing concern everywhere. But, you know, the Americans have their own unique problems in their own justice system.
Yes.
Their own sort of attitude towards legal aid with their underfunded public defender system,
exactly.
Which ours is different from. In Canada,
yes.
You essentially, or at least in Ontario, I should say, you are entitled to try and get the lawyer of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And if that lawyer is prepared to take your case under legal aid, then legal aid will pay that individual lawyer, as opposed to legal aid does not work that, you know, you're charged with something and you're just given whatever lawyer is on the list.
Yeah.
We don't have that. So that's a very good benefit of our system, this concept of choice, which we want to see continue as well.
Yeah. I understand Chris Bentley is rumored to be entertaining reducing the privileges of certificate law, where you can choose your own lawyer?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know whether he's contemplating that or not. I don't think that's something that I have heard that's coming out of the Attorney General's office.
Was suggested,
you know,
in the paper, again.
Mr. Bentley practiced criminal defense law in London for a number of years under the certificate system and is a great advocate of our, you know, right to choice of counsel. But obviously he's in a different position now as Attorney General. Hopefully he will, remember, and I think he does, what our system is all about in this province.
So you think maybe London coming on stream with this boycott might have a disproportionate effect in bringing this to the attention of a practicing London lawyer who's now in cabinet?
No, I think that our Attorney General is fully aware of the problem, and he's I think he's trying to work at it in his own way. I know that he's thinks that the boycott is not helpful politically to try and achieve whatever ends that they're trying to achieve, and I think what we're saying is, well, we may appreciate that. All we're trying to do is that this goes beyond just, you know, the politics of it. We would like, you know, sort of the citizens of the province, the voters, to know that this is a real and serious issue and should not just be considered to be something secondary, because the administration of justice is very important, and it's very important that people who are innocent of crimes not be found guilty and that they be able to, you know, provide an adequate defense to their cases. And, you know, I'll say this, and it sounds like, you know, blowing the horn of defense lawyers. Defense lawyers have done just that. You know, they have been part of this system for a long period of time, and they've given a lot that way. The public may not see it, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's just now sort of a reckoning is coming when we can see, because we're in the system every day, knowing the disparities that are occurring, and that if they continue to occur, because things take a long time to unfold,
that
we're going to see the problem of young lawyers not wanting to do criminal defense work.
I understand you're already seeing it.
We are seeing that. You know, there's a great graying of the bar. That we see, and younger lawyers are going to go to more lucrative areas of the law than criminal defense work.
Right.
And it's difficult if you don't have those younger lawyers, you don't have the sort of the money in the system to mentor them as they come along. Now, again, you can say in the private world, you know, that should happen, but what we have to remember is that criminal law isn't just a private situation. It's not like someone... person A suing some person B, or it's not between those individuals. This is a case where there are two parties involved. One is the individual, but the other is the state.
Yeah. So you have limited power against almost infinite power.
One might suggest that.
Yeah. It seems that the problem comes out of a kind of electoral point of view, and you haven't obviously taken a political point of view of this action, because if you had, you would have done this closer to the election, and the election is still a long way away, so you're hoping to resolve the problem, from the look of it, before the election comes out. But the problem, as you mentioned, it seems to be a kind of NIMBY attitude. It's like, not my concern. This does, you know, this isn't relevant in my backyard. Take these nasty people away. I won't have any of these people today, kind of thing.
It is, and it's beyond being political. I mean, we're not espousing one political point of view or another, and frankly, you know, the administration of justice is more important than, you know, a political issue.
Right.
It's really grassroots, and that's what we would like. We would like to have more understanding.
Yeah.
That it is very important, and we don't usually think about it unless, ourselves or someone we know is, you know, facing, you know, that problem with being charged with an offense.
Yeah.
We don't think about it. Or we, you know, we read the sensational stories in the newspaper and make comment on them, and we like to, you know, get involved or understand it that way. But from, you know, the true perspective, there's a great distortion as to what the administration of justice is about, as is determined either by the media or what you see on TV or in the movies, as to what really occurs in the real world to the individuals who are facing it.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's not like a TV show at all when you're
not
involved
at all
in it. Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't addressed that you would like to address about this issue before, you know, we look to wrapping up the interview?
Well, I don't want to be repetitive, but I mean, I think the thing about the issue that's important is to know that it goes beyond political boundaries. It goes to the root of our justice system in this province. We've had a great system that was built up, you know, in the late 60s concerning legal aid in Ontario. We want to see that continue. This is not just an issue about lawyers lining their pockets, but it's like saying, you know, if you don't provide for the defense as you would for the prosecution, we are not going to have a fair playing field. And what we believe that most of the citizens think is that we should have a fair playing field when it comes to criminal justice, and it's just not there. So, I mean, that's really the issue that we're trying to get at, is to show that it hasn't been funded properly for a long time. There have been some minor increases when things have gotten to critical level, but what we're saying is we're getting to critical level again if we're not there already, and we have to look to the future. And unfortunately, you know, the economic timing may be bad, but it's always bad, and it's something that we have to look at more than just saying we must get tough on crime and we must put it all in all these resources to the prosecution side. We have to look at it, you know, from a clear perspective otherwise.
Do you have any last-minute advice for someone who can't find a lawyer in a criminal matter?
Continue to look. Try, you know, there are applications to the court for the appointment of counsel. Those have been fairly rare.
Okay.
But it's a scary world for those individuals, I would think. You know, there was an old phrase that any lawyer who represents himself in court has got an idiot for a client. Our criminal justice system has become too complicated for an individual to be there representing themselves without counsel. It does occur, sometimes successfully, but more often than not, they are not going to get a fair shake. And just to keep trying to find a lawyer if they can, and to show that they should, you know, get the support of people out there that, you know, again, we're innocent until proven guilty, and you know, we just have to keep fighting that fight.
Thank you for that message. I appreciate your time today, and we'll put it out on tomorrow, actually, at noontime at 93.3 FM.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Reedy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.